Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burda, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Friday, October 8th. Are your Halloween decorations up yet? Mine will go up this weekend. On today's episode of the Roundup, we're going to talk about something that's just as scary, and that's health apps. One recent report said that there are more than 350,000 consumer-facing health apps on the market, with 90,000 of those going live in 2020 alone. So today on the Roundup, we're going to talk about attempts to corral that market and make it more organized, if not more useful, for both providers and patients. The first is an effort by a group of health systems to create an interoperable health app marketplace. The second is a study of EHR vendors and their effort to connect with third-party health apps and developers. To explain the purpose, promise, and perils of those efforts are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning? Dave?
After a one-year pandemic delay, the 43rd Chicago Marathon will take place this Sunday. It's among the world's largest and most important marathons. It passes our block on both sides at the 5 and 8 mile mark, so we'll get to see the race up close. It's going to be hot in the 80s, so tough on the runners, just like COVID has been tough on us all. I've run the race 7 times, Dave. Running marathons makes no sense at all, but does testify to the undeniable capacity of human beings to take on big challenges. We have a lot of them in healthcare. So like Sunday's marathoners, I'm putting my head down, leaning into the race, and working to get kinder, smarter, affordable care for all.
Wow, that's a busy weekend.
I get up every day trying to fix the broken healthcare system. It's a huge lift.
That's great. Julie, how about you?
Well, for me, it's a bit of a race between the environment and healthcare this week because I'm an avid diver and lover of all creatures in the sea. So I've been personally devastated by what's happening with the oil spill in Southern California. It's so sad.
Wow. Marathoners, divers. Boy, I've got some work to do here. Thank you. All right. Now, before we talk about the health app marketplace, I wanted to ask you about some of your health apps, as I know you both use some. Dave, what app do you find most useful? What app do you find useless?
My best and worst app is iHealth by Apple. It's incredible for tracking my fitness activities generated through my Apple Watch, and I use it all the time for that. At the same time, it's loaded up with all these potential health applications related to nutrition, cardiovascular health, hearing, sleeping, respiratory function, and so on. And they don't seem to work so well, and I never pay attention to any of them. So maybe someday, but not yet.
Thanks, Dave. Julie, how about you? What health app works for what you need, and what health app never worked for what you need?
Well, thanks to my firm, I've tried apps recently, like PlushCare, which has become my virtual PCP. And I have to say, it's pretty cool to be living in that world. And also Clio, which has been kind of a godsend for questions about my kids or starting to explore how to use it for aging women's health issues. So those have been good experiences. But I will say that I went through this phase a number of years ago where I was into training my brain and I used apps like Peak and others to try to stimulate my memory and play with numbers and verbal reasoning and things like that. And while I've definitely been known to do a crossword or two in my day, those apps make me a little crazy.
Yeah, online Sudoku is not for me either. Thanks, Julie. For me, the best app is the one that connects to my patient portal. I use it all the time to schedule appointments, look at test results, and talk to my doctor. The ones I never use are the retail pharmacy apps. I loaded them all when I was trying to get a COVID vaccine back in, you know, February and March. But since then, I've never opened them. And of course, I'm still getting all their email advertising. So shame on me. All right, let's set down our phones and talk health app marketplaces. This week, 3 big health systems, SSM Health, Presbyterian Healthcare Services, and Intermountain Healthcare, announced the creation of Graphite Health to, in their words, accelerate the digital transformation of healthcare. And Dave, you thought you had a big lift. How is that? The founders described Graphite Health as a standardized, interoperable data platform that enables a secure and open marketplace to streamline the distribution of digital health solutions for health systems and entrepreneurs. Dave, in English, what is Graphite Health? What is it trying to do? Why is it needed? And who will benefit if it works?
As the saying goes, bad English is regrettable, bad Scotch is unforgivable. Boy, that was a mishmash describing what the company's trying to do. Graphite Health is the nonprofit health system answer to Epic's App Orchard. They both seek to create digital marketplaces where healthcare app developers can offer their products, hopefully in a seamless and customer-friendly way. Graphite differs from the App Orchard in that it will be open source. Epic curates its offerings on its platform and has onerous user agreements for participating developers. The founding sponsors, Presby, SSM, and Intermountain, hope to bring at least 30 health systems and 40 million covered lives into their ecosystem. That is going to be a big lift. Graphite is the brainchild of Dr. Reese Robinson, who is the chief innovation advisor at Presby, as well as the company's first CEO. Robinson's vision is to create a plug-and-play environment for digital tools like those found in smartphone app stores that would enable health systems to pick and choose the apps they want to bring into their own customer-facing platforms. Doing this well means eliminating interoperability and adoption pain points. That's a big deal. It's plagued the industry in its ability to develop seamless, customer-friendly consumer interfaces. Graphite's governance model will mirror that of Civica Rx, the nonprofit company established to manufacture generic drugs used in hospitals. Graphite's task is tougher than addressing monopoly pricing practices by drug companies. Graphite will compete in the open and freewheeling digital marketplace that Julie was just describing, where even Epic isn't faring so well. I do wish Graphite well. Creating meaningful consumer engagement is healthcare's final frontier. At the same time, I'm skeptical that health systems will be the channels through which consumer-facing apps emerge. If I had to bet, I'd put my money on popular consumer apps integrating into health system platforms, not the other way around. This is what Apple's trying to do, albeit without much success, as I indicated earlier.
Got it, Dave. Thank you. Julie, what's the job to be done that these systems are trying to do? Is this a good thing for startups, entrepreneurs, innovators, and disruptors? Or is this just a good thing for the systems?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. You know, something like a Graphite could become the new standardized data platform for not just these three health systems, but as they would say in their press releases, you know, more coming. And that allows these systems, frankly, to stop supporting point solutions and start operating all their health apps in the way Dave talked about, in a way that also relies on Graphite security and, you know, standard protocols, and just simplifies everything they have to do around even, you know, potentially some of the contracting. So it's definitely a bit of an anti-Epic App Orchard and a swat against Apple. I agree with all that. At the end of the day, it's just another app store for the apps. And if you're an innovator, this is good as a way to scale to at least these three systems, if not, again, the more coming. It could be an incredible kind of one-stop shop way to scale. There's no doubt. But this is not a flip of the button for the health systems. It's going to require each of these systems to interoperate in some way to Graphite and all the relevant technology systems in their hospital that are carrying patient data that these apps will need to use. So it's not all their systems, but of course, it's many of them. And for the innovators, you know, it might allow them to leverage the patient data that the hospitals can bring to bear through Graphite. But at the end of the day, it's not clear to me that Graphite will embed the apps into the EMR-based workflow of physicians and other caregivers in these acute settings. So that's a bit of an issue, and that's what Epic does in its App Orchard. A lot of their apps are now starting to be embedded into the workflow, which is, you know, an important piece of all this. So Graphite itself is definitely threatening to some of the new technologies that are looking to themselves be the standardized data platform or data warehouse for health systems across the country. And it could threaten some of the next generation health information exchange products that have begun commercializing the last couple of years. So could be good for the app innovators, but potentially bad for the more kind of back office, you know, embedded technology platforms attempting to integrate hospital systems.
Good rundown of the winners and losers here. Thank you. Dave, anything to add to Julie's comments?
That was great. You know, you've seen one app store, you've seen all the app stores, I guess, or maybe you've just seen one. My favorite nugget in doing research for today's show came from a survey by a communications company named Spock. You got to love that branding. They explored the extent to which physicians are using smartphones relative to pagers and communicating with patients. Not surprisingly, use of smartphones and tablets are on the rise. They've overtaken pagers numerically as the primary devices for patient communications. But what absolutely floors me is that 49% of healthcare organizations still use in-house or on-site pagers, probably due to concerns about data security. Drug dealers used to be the last bastion for pagers, but they abandoned them at least a decade ago. But healthcare hangs on. Can you see why I might be a little skeptical that health systems become the engines of innovations in consumer healthcare?
The pager.
That's great. Thanks, Dave. Yeah, we'll have to do a whole episode on faxes. Stay tuned. Now let's talk about this new study on health app integration with EHR systems. HHS's Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology did the study, which ran in the Journal of the American Medical Informatics Association. The ONC looked at the app galleries of five EHR vendors, and I do believe Epic was one, to see how many third-party apps could connect to the vendor's EHR systems. In total, the number of connectable apps rose 20% from 600 in 2019 to 734 in 2020, and the number of unique app developers rose from 517 to 610 over the same period. Julie, what's your big takeaway from the study? Again, is it good news for startups, entrepreneurs, innovators, and disruptors? Why or why not?
Look, well, EHR is still in a bit of a transition from being the system to just sort of the system of record. This kind of growth in integrated apps is all good news in my book, frankly. And I think it really represents the fact that we are in this next big digital wave of experimentation in all sorts of different ways, and apps kind of reflect that. The workflow, as I talked about before, is where it's at. And much of that workflow is still in the EHR. But the transition underway highlights where the real value could be in this kind of app functionality and the information availability in apps that, frankly, may supersede the EHR-based workflow at some point. So it's an exciting time when you can see CIOs, physicians, and patients all seeing opportunity coming from, you know, these types of apps, new information, analytics around, you know, care progress, et cetera. So, you know, I was personally pleased to see this analysis, which may or may not be accurate, but this is how I looked at it. The administrative apps, like those that support scheduling, check-in, billing, et cetera, made up about 42% of the apps. The clinical apps like telehealth, decision support, and other kind of clinical automation were at 38%. But when you add on care management apps, which were 31%, you start to see like some real girth in the clinical apps, many of which I would suspect sprouted up during the pandemic and really made up this 20% jump. At least I would be hopeful in that suspicion. And, you know, while seeing 20% on patient engagement was initially disappointing to me, I actually think we should be happy that it's that high, that we have apps that are trying to, you know, work through the EHR on patient engagement.
Yeah, it's not just shuffling papers anymore. That's great. Thank you. Dave, what does the study say about the willingness of EHR vendors to open up their systems to outside technologies? And how will this ultimately help consumers?
You know, I feel like I'm being a curmudgeon today, but I took a different conclusion from the numbers. We saw a massive increase in the number of apps for the EHR grow from 600 to 734. That's in comparison to the hundreds of thousands of consumer apps that are now out in the marketplace. In some ways, this feels like a reprise of the debate during the Cold War about whether centralized or decentralized economies would create better societies. We know how that one turned out. So I'm not surprised at all that EHR app development has slowed. It's never been that fast to begin with. even with the big push from ONC on interoperability, incumbents love the current system. They don't really want to change it. They're living high off the hog at the expense of greater society. Too many incumbents talk about value while practicing profiteering. We shouldn't mistake articulation for accomplishment. We should look at what they're doing, not what they're saying. The problem with EHR systems like Epic's is that they're first and foremost billing systems. Clinical capabilities are added on. Now they've gotten better, but it's still, at the end of the day, revenue first, not outcomes. So as long as the providers and payers primarily care about revenue optimization, the industry will never produce the breakthrough innovations required to transform and revolutionize care delivery for consumers. The good news is that there are lots of innovative companies working on the problem. Julie lives this reality every day at Transformation Capital. It's the Wild West out there. Investment is flowing into digital health at record levels, targeting solutions to healthcare's holy grail, delivering the right care at the right time in the right place at the right price. Consumerism, I believe, will win in the end, but it'll be a long battle, just like the Cold War was, and it will be epic between now and the time we actually get the right care at the right time in the right place at the right price.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. Julie, anything to add to Dave's comments?
Well, a little comment there. Let's hope that efforts like Graphite unseat Epic's power, but I'm not hopeful about that. The one thing I will mention from the ONC report that I noticed is that the fire-related apps are pretty stagnant in growth, didn't really increase much. And I think fire is perhaps one of the most misunderstood approaches in the industry if you're not close to a niche Chopra or super technical, because it's a very narrow set of data that can't support much of the explosive way that these other apps are using data. And they talk about how fire, you know, is really used for specific use cases, and that's why it didn't grow. Okay, that makes sense to me. But in reality, I think fire supports kind of the more complex integration of data issues that tend to live behind the scenes. And, you know, if we're going to look at fire in the same breath that we look at app explosion, we're going to have to expand its data capabilities and its ability to support needed innovation over time.
Oh, very interesting. Thanks, Julie. I guess with more than 300,000 health apps on the market, someone has to bring some sense of order to what's going on. I'm not sure health systems or EHR vendors are the right ones to do it, though. Call me skeptical. Now let's talk briefly about other big healthcare news that happened this past week. Julie, what was your lead healthcare story this week and why?
Well, I have two. Can't just have one. The first is that I did take note that the people in Colorado are being super logical by requiring organ transplant patients to have a vaccine. I thought that was actually pretty smart. But I definitely am back on my Texas soapbox this week because I saw an article about a Louisiana clinic that is struggling to absorb the surge of abortions created by the Texas new abortion law, obviously an abortion clinic. And while I'm happy to see women doing what they need to do and coming over the border to take care of what they believe is their choice, the cost, the effort, the challenge, and all the women who didn't make it over the border just makes me feel like the whole thing is so wrong.
Yeah, I would agree. Both of those are big stories this past week. Dave, what topped your healthcare broadcast this week and why?
Well, I seem to be focused on revenue cycle this morning, and we may need to do a replay of our Foresight Health song, Churn Baby Churn, about what's going on in that space. This week, Ensemble, which was started by the nonprofit health system, Bon Secours Mercy, announced that they're looking to go public. At the same time, the behemoth United Health Group is trying to buy Change Healthcare for $8 billion, although they're running into some FTC regulatory challenges. Revenue cycle is huge business. And as I mentioned earlier, its primary function is to manipulate payment formularies to pay providers as much as possible for the services they provide, even routine care services. It's a frenzy out there. Healthcare's smartest data scientists, including my nephew, are flocking to rev cycle companies. It's where the money is. Consumers, in contrast, are left in the dust. They've become a cog in a massive revenue optimization Ponzi scheme. Yeats' couplet from his famous poem, The Second Coming, captures this almost demonic character of how healthcare revenues flow when he writes, "The best lack all conviction and the worst are filled with passionate intensity."
Wow. Thanks, Dave. That's great. For me, it was the World Health Organization recommending a malaria vaccine for at-risk children around the world. I thought that was huge. I don't know if you guys ever took that online quiz about what animal kills the most humans each year. The answer is the mosquito. All right. Thank you, Dave. And thank you, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on the Healthcare Now Radio Network, iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming services. Subscribe now and don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.